Hi, I'm Sue Hall, and welcome to Talk the Dis Out of Dyslexia, part of the whole Dyslexic Society's first podcast series. Today, August 5th, I proudly present my podcast co-host, one of my young adult students who shares his story of discovery. And as he was the one who persuaded me to embark on this podcast adventure, I am very grateful to him. Okay, Kristen, always a pleasure to see you.
Nice
Thank
to
you
see
very
you.
Much for doing this. And I just want to let everybody know that these interviews were your idea, and I think they're a brilliant idea.
Oh,
and
thank
I'm
you.
Hoping that they'll help people relate to what dyslexia really is
yeah.
and how it affects them. And let's just get going and see what happens.
Oh, that's a beautiful start. I love that.
Okay, so how did we meet? What brought you here?
It was largely my grandma and your book. Yeah, she got me the book, your book, and she recommended for me to read it. And so I did, and it really hit home. It really hit hard. It explained a lot of my, I guess you could say, strengths and weaknesses throughout life. And it also kind of shone a lot of light on how to deal with them. And so I figured I'd email you. And I think I remember I was sitting at the ferries going to Nanaimo when I emailed you. Yeah. And I was just like, I gotta talk to this woman. Because,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And what did I say that helped? Do you remember?
In the book or just in general?
In the book or when you phoned me.
Oh, man. I think it was...
What was the bit that hit hard, you know, made the most impact?
I guess because the way you write your book, the way you explain things, and it wasn't just, oh, you're writing a book. You actually, there was passion behind it. And there was experience. And I could relate to that in more ways than one. And the way you wrote your book, it just kind of, you know, opens up in your eye or whatever the term is. So it...
There's a resonance.
Yeah. it really helped. And I'm really glad I reached out.
I'm glad you did too.
Yeah.
We had a good week. So what did you think dyslexia was originally? Did you know that you were dyslexic? Had you been given that label?
I knew I was dyslexic, but I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know... I could see in 3D images. Like, I mean, I did those things, but I thought everybody thought like that. Nobody told me, like, I was told, you're dyslexic, but I went, okay, great. Yes. It just means I'm stupid. Like, it really, I thought that for years.
A lot of people do.
Well, yeah, because, you know, so many of the people who have it, they struggle because they're not shown how to handle it.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people, you know about it. And people always assume... Oh, if you're dyslexic, you must be slow, or you can't learn, or it whatever it is. There's always some negative stigma behind it.
Yeah.
When in reality, and I think you explain this in your book, or you do actually, we go at tremendous speeds the way we think.
So you thought that you were stupid. You thought that there was something wrong with you.
Yeah. I mean, because
a lot of people do.
Well, I think it's people also don't know how to teach. People with dyslexia, you have to approach them completely differently, because they're not like, I shouldn't say normal people, because there's no, I don't think there's
what
such a thing.
A typical education.
Yeah,
work.
You go in and you write, you read your book, you write about it, or you just do the math, and over repetition, you'll learn.
Mm-hmm.
Say, no, that's just beating it in somebody. That's not actually teaching them. That's
right.
They're not going to learn from them. That's just kind of...
Sort of force feeding.
It's exactly. And if it's, you know, I can't put a square into a round hole. And eventually, I could break the square into the round hole. But it's not going to be a square anymore,
no.
right? It's not
no.
going to fit properly.
No.
So
that's right.
I think dyslexics kind of are like a puzzle piece in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
I
a different kind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very nice piece. But do you still have that view? Do you still see dyslexia as... The original view that you had of being dyslexic and being stupid, do you have that view now?
No. I think the view I have now is I have tools in which you've shown me to how to handle it and ways to practice it, if you know what I mean. I think it is, for me, you have to practice it to what's the word I'm looking for? Stay on top of it, I guess. Because it's always going to be a problem, no matter what you do. And some days it's weird. Some days it's almost like the dyslexia goes away, and then other days it's heavier than usual. And I think it depends on what you're doing. Like, I've...
It does vary. The monk describes it as there's a threshold. It's like on good days, you can handle more confusion. On bad days, you can't handle as much. And so it does vary.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it depends on the kind of confusion, like with mathematics. Mm-hmm. Like if somebody was to throw a piece of paper in front of me saying, you know, you need to under... Like, for example, I got paid. And I looked at my pay stub, and it's not the math that's difficult. I guess it's finding out where to start in the math, if that's the right way to put it. And oftentimes I just draw a blank, and even though I know how to do it, like 1 + 1 = 2, I mean, that's very simple math, but you know how to do that. But it's, for me, it's almost like it's an overwhelming, because I know I'm dyslexic. I get it's a little daunting, and so to have tools behind that, and including reading, to understand, like you were showing me, when your mind goes off, when you're thinking about something, how to get back is the most important thing. And we do need to teach that in schools, especially, because they don't do that in just your everyday any school, really.
Well, there's a lot in what you say. I mean, the people who have dyslexia have this amazing gift, right, that they can imagine something which is three-dimensional, and the part of them that's looking at that imaginary picture can move around that object, right? I mean, that's the key to the whole experience of being dyslexic.
Yeah.
And I think I would say that every single person who has this challenge is able to do that. It's just the challenge manifests in different ways. So some people are very good at reading, and some are very good at writing, and some are very good at math, and others can't do any of it. And it just manifests in so many different ways.
Yeah.
But the point is, if you show people how to control that perception, if you explain to them that it will always disappear off into la-la land when you're confused, because it sort of sorts out the confusion, but you need to have it in the right place to be able to deal with the two-dimensional world, which is obviously what we show you how to do, then it's a little bit like wearing glasses and not wearing glasses. If you've got your glasses on, you can see the letters accurately, and if you haven't, then you can't.
That's a perfect analogy for that.
So, but the math part of it is interesting too, because I hear that there are two different ways of teaching math, and apparently you can teach it in a linear sequential way. So there are steps, you know, if you do the first step and the second step and the third step, and then you'll get the answer, right?
Yeah.
Or you can teach it where you give the person the concept, and then there's a pattern that evolves.
Yeah.
Now, I have a feeling I was taught the linear sequential way because I hated math.
Yeah, I was
but
too.
Now I've done the math program, and I love giving the math program. It's nice to be able to introduce the concept, and then you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
For example, when it comes to multiplying, right? At school, yes, I could repeat the times table, 2 × 2, 2 × 4, that sort of thing. And yes, I could use that stupid sheet where they give you the numbers on it, right? Which is just like reading a bus timetable, in my opinion. But I didn't know what multiplying was. What was I actually doing all the time?
Yeah.
And so when I was training, I was really old for this, and I was doing my training with Ron, and he said, well, multiplying is just adding the same number over and over. And I thought, my God, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Right? Why didn't anybody just say something that simple?
Yeah.
Because I can add 2 and 2 and 2 and 2, you know? I know that sounds really sort of weird, and people may think, well, why on earth didn't she understand that originally?
Yeah.
But nobody had actually vocalized it or given me that image in the beginning to make it work.
Well, then there it is, the image, right? It's never explained to us in an image-based way. Like, the 2D, it's for somebody who is dyslexic, the 2D world is It's like working through a hard maze, I find.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if you're just getting thrown into something you don't know. I mean, everybody gets thrown into things they don't know, but for a dyslexic, it's very different. Yeah, it's a very big shock, for sure. And so if things aren't explained to us in ways that we need it to be explained, you know.
And the thing is, it's easily done. I mean, if we're working with teachers and we're explaining to them how we think and how we learn and how you can do this with the little ones right from the beginning, then actually, to be honest, the difficulties don't need to happen.
Yeah, it's true. I guess I was nervous at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was definitely nervous because I felt like I was about to go look into a mirror, if you know what I mean. And really discovering a bit more about myself, which is something I needed.
Adults love that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody more fascinating to an adult than themselves.
Isn't that funny? Sounds egotistical, right? But,
well, it does, but I think it's true.
Yeah, it is very true. And then I think I was very amazed because the way you were facilitating and just bringing things up, things started to connect much more after you, in the class than in reading the book. The book, it made a lot of sense, but then doing it myself and having you there explaining and trying, it was just like, oh wow, there's a fun way to learning.
Oh.
It doesn't have to be a grind. It doesn't have to just be miserable.
It doesn't have to be hard and painful and
right
and boring.
And boring. You know, because when I was going to school, you know, I was always caught staring out the window, especially when it came to, you know, languages or mathematics. Even if I was interested, it was difficult. And then at the end, I was just very glad that I took the program. I accepted myself a bit more, knowing I have dyslexia, because I was never in denial that I had it. I just didn't know what it meant, and I didn't know how to move around it.
Yes.
I didn't and go about it. And so if something came up that was difficult for me being dyslexic, I would find ways to avoid it.
Yeah.
Or I'd find ways to get somebody else to do it, if that makes any sense.
We have to cope.
Yeah, you do. And so now, if I make a mistake and somebody says, oh, you know, are you stupid or how do you not know this already? I won't just say, oh, I'm dyslexic, but I'll say, I'm dyslexic and it means this.
Okay, so Tristan, from your experience, right, as a child, as a teenager at school, as an adult with this way of thinking and learning, how difficult do you think it was? I mean, you can't always measure yourself against anybody else, do you know what I mean? Because you are you, right? Mm-hmm. But do you feel it was particularly tough? Do you think it was something you could have enjoyed and you would have liked to have enjoyed?
Dyslexia itself.
Your whole schooling and growing up.
Yeah, it was tremendously difficult.
Okay.
Very. I mean, I definitely enjoyed aspects of school. It was hard because I think nobody really understood.
Yeah. I don't think they did.
No. Well, how could they, right? It's not necessarily their fault.
No.
They
don't have that information.
And so, especially with my dad, he really wanted me to be able to learn. I don't think he thought I was dumb, but I think he was very frustrated that I didn't learn like everybody else. If that makes... I think that's right.
Yeah.
And so he...
Was he a teacher?
No, he was a mechanic.
Yes. No, well then maybe he has this way.
Right, yeah, I think he might. But what I went through school was definitely... It was always... I knew going to school almost every day was going to be a challenge. Everybody faces challenges, but it was... And every kid doesn't like going to school.
Well, actually, some do, strangely.
That's true. Right? I guess
The ones who learn how they're taught, they quite enjoy going to school.
I wanted to stop thinking that I was stupid, so I went to school and I tried as hard as I could, and it was the wrong way of doing it. Because I might as well slap my head onto the textbook for a lot of times, just slammed it in there, because a lot of the time I didn't understand why I couldn't grasp something very well.
It's interesting that you say it was the wrong way. Right?
Yeah.
How would you have dealt with it the right way? Would you have avoided school altogether?
I think I would have avoided certain classes completely. But I didn't want people to think I was dumb, and I didn't want to think I was dumb. No. So I forced myself to go to school and do classes that I hated. I mean, they're required classes, obviously, but I'd go there, I'd try my hardest, I'd try to learn it the way that everybody else is learning it.
Yeah.
I'd take a quiz, and I'd get, 6 out of 10, and I'd barely pass.
Mm.
And I'd want to pull my hair out, because I didn't understand why.
Right.
I put the time in, I put the effort in, I practiced, and I wasn't picking it up.
Yeah.
And I thought it was my fault.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, you would.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, the teachers are there to teach. They're there for a reason. Mm-hmm. They got the education.
Mm-hmm.
And some teachers are better than others, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Like with geology, I really enjoyed geology in high school because it was very visual,
yes.
Right? There's layers, plates.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And with English, I really enjoyed certain parts of English because if there is a book that had a lot of imagery behind it,
yeah.
I would fly through it. I think I remember reading The Hobbit back in like grade 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished it within like a week or something. And I'd never really read that much because of what,
Yeah.
So, I think what it really had to do is I didn't realize. I had to do it the way I wanted it to.
Yes.
Because that way I could learn. But I didn't know what that meant.
Nobody ever talks to us about how we learn.
Yeah.
People ask, what are you thinking? But nobody ever says, how are you thinking?
Exactly.
And that, actually, to be honest, is one of the most important questions. Because if you don't know how someone's thinking and processing, you don't know how to deliver the information.
Yeah. So that should be the first thing you ask,
I think,
a child when they go to school. How do you think? I really do, right?
I'm not sure if a five-year-old is going to be able to tell
you. No, but there must be like an age,
I wonder.
You
can watch.
Yeah.
Honestly, you can sometimes just watch and observe, because I've noticed that when you have a crowd of little ones, say a preschool group or kindergarten or something, and they're all playing, right, there will be a few who say everything according to their imaginary game, right?
Yeah.
So they'll be the ones who are just playing and enjoying themselves, and the occasional thing comes out, right? But there will be a few in that group who just say every single thing that's in their head. Right? You can hear it, right? And so those are the ones that possibly will have this way of thinking, because they don't think with sound inside their head. So to hear themselves think, they have to say it outside.
It's almost like an old VCR set. Where, I guess for a dyslexic to recall something, they have to go through the entire memory of that day, let's say. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, it's true.
Because it's a visual thing, so you're hitting reverse
and
then watching everything kind of play in front of you.
Yeah.
Like a film.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's so difficult to go to sleep sometimes.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
It is such a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's so much to replay.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're thinking 32 images a second, right? I did the math for my book. I can't remember what the numbers are now. We listen to words at 3 or 4 words a second when we're speaking. But when we're processing images, we can process at 32 a second, right? So, I mean, can you imagine how many images we have to process when our head hits the pillow?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. And at such speed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So school was... It was
a challenge.
It was really tough.
It was. I mean, I had friends and I did all kinds of stuff. I always went to class, but my attention span wasn't the greatest because if they had explained something that had visuals in it and then all back, and then there was no visuals and then back to visuals,
mm-hmm.
I'd only pick up on the visual aspect of it, and so I'd pick up on some things up, and then I'd have to go back, and even taking down notes half the time didn't matter because I only took down the notes that I actually saw and heard.
Did you write notes?
Yeah, I would write notes.
In words rather than...
In words.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I would bring my laptop and I'd type it. It's more efficient, but I don't think the
it's
memory
is not the
stuck.
Same connection, is it?
Yeah, there's something different.
Yeah, I notice this. If I have a shopping list, right, and I write it, then say I forget it. When I get to the shop, I can see the piece of paper. I can see if it was lined. I can see the color of the pen that I used.
Yeah.
Right? And I can sort of remember the shopping list.
Yeah.
But if I do it in my phone, and people say, oh, so efficient, just tap what you want in the phone.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no connection in
the world. Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. And then you went to university, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Langara and then I went to Camosun after that. Both great schools, but I wasn't studying the thing I wanted to study. Well, I mean, at Langara I was, to a degree. I went there and I was doing general arts, and I was doing prerequisites for nursing, because at the time that's what I wanted to become.
Yeah.
And, you know, I took a couple of drawing classes, I took a couple of English classes, I took a biology class, and I don't know what it was with biology, but I had a hard time with that one. Oh. Even with the visuals, because there's a lot of that. It's so funny how our minds work, because I can physically put myself in the classroom, and I remember exactly where I sat. You know what I mean? I remember all these things. I remember how it looked. But you tell me to remember the piece of paper and what I wrote down for an answer. There's nothing there. But I remember the inside of school, how I got there and everything perfectly well.
I had to do anatomy and physiology at one point, and I remember now that I used to try and photograph the pages of the textbook, right? So the diagram would be there, but then say all the little enzymes or all the functions of the liver, I couldn't remember that part, so I used to have to make a word rhyme that went with the first letter of the enzyme and stuff like that, which is, it's that third party learning, like the alphabet song.
Yeah.
Like the person knows the song and the song knows the alphabet. So I didn't know the function of the liver until I'd gone through my little word rhyme and things like that. And I couldn't tell you now. The information is just not there.
And then after Langara, I went to Camosun to study business.
Mm-hmm.
And I really actually... I mean, I enjoyed aspects of it. Like, data analysis was fun, marketing and economics.
How many people say that, do they?
No. Well, I guess I like data analysis because it's interesting.
It's a bit like a detective story thing.
Businesses want to know what you're looking up and trends and things like that. And so if they collect more data about you or what you buy, et cetera, then they can market towards you.
Yeah.
And then economics I actually did really well on. I think because of the graphs.
Oh,
and there's a visual aspect of it. And then I did accounting. Accounting came by and it really was horrible.
Oh dear. You're in good company. Did you hear the story about Richard Branson? Who is a multimillionaire, obviously, like a billionaire.
Yeah.
He had no concept of what net profit was against gross profit until somebody gave him the picture of a fishing net.
Yeah.
And the fishing net takes what you want to take home.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the gross is what they throw
away.
The side, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And he never got it till then.
Isn't that funny?
You imagine? He'd made millions.
Yeah. You don't have to know all the terminology just to be good at business, I would say. Isn't that funny?
That's a good point.
Right? Like the Beatles, for example. Paul McCartney and John Lennon didn't know how to read the notes.
Yeah. Einstein was told that he was no good at math.
Yeah, right? There you go. So I think keeping an open mind with people who think differently is probably very key.
And all this time at school, it had never crossed your mind that you might have a learning challenge? I mean, you knew it was difficult to learn, but you hadn't sort of...
I didn't know what it meant.
Popped it into a box.
I knew I had dyslexia, but I had no clue what that meant. I know I have dyslexia, and I knew back then I did.
Oh, how did you know back then? Had someone said?
Well, I got myself assessed,
okay.
And they're like, okay, we've labeled him dyslexic. But all I knew at the time, up until basically I read your book, was, oh, that just means troubles with words and math. That's it. No one sat me down and...
I'm with you.
Like,
there's just something wrong with you.
Yeah, you're just different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not normal.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Heaven.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, when I was going to school, writing a test, I'd get to use a computer when other people had to use the paper. Or I'd get a separate room with other people who were disabled, so to say. Not necessarily dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
But it meant nothing.
Right.
Right, nobody, like, oh, this is how we teach a dyslexic, so we better put him here. I was just off to the side so he can write his test, and then back to class, and then off to the side again so he can write his test, and then, okay, class is done.
So that confirmed that you were different.
It confirmed I was different. It confirmed that you're stupid or you're...
faulty.
I guess a lot of the times, if there was something challenging in class, I would either grind at it till utter exhaustion, or I just say, screw it, I'm not going to do it. Most of the time it was grind out until I couldn't do it anymore.
Well, we only have a few options to cope, right?
And
we put them in categories. You've got the concentration one, which is where you grind till you're exhausted and you get headaches and stomach aches. And then you have the dependence, where you ask other people to do things. And these days, technology is really helping with that one.
Yeah.
And then you have avoidance. I'm not going to school, you can't make me. And then you have the class clown, which is where Jay Leno and Robin Williams went, and lots of wonderful comedians started out as the class clown, right? So we have to cope somehow. Have to get through the day.
I was probably a little bit of all of those, but mostly dependent and avoidant. I think those were the two large ones for me.
It sounds like concentrating was a big one, though.
Yes. If I couldn't avoid it,
yes,
and if I couldn't get somebody else to give me the answer, I would focus with immense amount of
effort,
which sometimes worked, and sometimes I just crashed and burned. Mm-hmm. I didn't remember it. Mm-hmm. It was just trying to put a square into a round hole.
Yeah.
You know, exactly.
Yeah. No, I get it. Then you found this book, and then you made that phone call, and then you discovered that actually it was an okay thing.
Yeah, right. There are other people that think like this.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that I notice. Is the minute you say to somebody that you have this wonderful way of thinking, that you can imagine things that are 3D and you can see them from all different angles. When I'm doing this at an interview, I will absolutely guarantee that one of the parents will say, but doesn't everybody do that?
Yeah.
Right? Because it's who you are, and you can't imagine when you think a certain way, you can't imagine that somebody else doesn't think that way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's really nice when actually somebody voices it.
Yeah. Well, I met one of my friends, and she, for years, every now and then, like, I can't do this because she called it a speech impediment. But she was dyslexic. And I only just recently learned that she's dyslexic. But for the longest time, I thought she just had a problem saying things. And then one day, I was talking to somebody, and she said, oh, sorry, I have a speech impediment. I'm like, what? Okay. I had to ask her, I'm like, what do you mean by speech impediment? She's like, oh, I'm dyslexic. I'm like, why have you been calling it a speech impediment? I don't know, but that's what I call it. Like, I've known you for I don't know how many years, and you have dyslexia.
Does she have like a lisp or
no
can't
lisp.
Say certain words?
I think she just doesn't want others to know that she's dyslexic.
Oh.
So she'd always call it a speech impediment.
Oh, but she sort of stumbles over her words and can't quite get them out.
Sometimes, yeah.
Oh.
But I think she knew.
One of my adult clients has this wonderful way of almost getting the right word, but not quite. So, for example, if someone has a dislocated shoulder, for him, it's discolated.
Discolated,
that's so cool. Does she do that sort of thing or not?
I think so.
A little bit.
When she said she has a speech impediment, it made sense because she reads a lot. She reads a lot of books.
Yeah.
She's an avid reader.
Yeah.
So when she said, oh, I'm dyslexic, I kind of looked at her funny. Like,
well, that's where we all go, right?
Yeah, she does stumble on her words, for sure. Like, I definitely stumble on my words, but when it comes to spelling, most of the time, if I can't spell a word right, it's off by one letter or two.
Yeah.
Like, it's just,
but
it's
how is
so
she,
close.
Is she okay with spelling?
I think so. I haven't actually sat down or see her write much, but I think so.
It's just the words coming out. A lot of people find that because they're thinking in 32 images a second, right? Our mouth is only able to deal with three or four words.
Yeah.
And it's too much for it sometimes.
It is.
And occasionally I've heard people say that you know, they'll stutter. I don't know any more about stuttering than that. I just happen to know that if you've got a lot of words to say, sometimes you just can't get them all out in one go.
I find, for me, when I have to talk, or if I have to explain something, especially if I'm excited about it, if I don't know the answer to it right away, or if I have the words in my head but I can't structure the sentence properly, I actually have to sit down and I have to not say anything. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll talk. I don't think she does that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably why she says it's a speech impediment, because she thinks so quickly, she has the answer, oh, blah, 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 and then she'll kind of, then the words don't come out correct.
See, I get into terrible trouble because I'm really good at interrupting people.
Oh, same.
You see, I know what they're going to say. I know where they're going. As soon as they start talking, I know where this is going and I know what my answer is. And it's really difficult keeping quiet till they finish.
Yeah, that has to be a dyslexic thing.
It's not uncommon.
Yeah.
It really isn't. What, do you remember what your main goal was for doing that week?
I think it was largely to, I guess, figure myself out a little bit more, help myself get more of a goal in life, and I thought maybe this way would be a good way to start that and get ahead, and I think I was right.
I think, if I remember, you had quite a few ideas of what you wanted to do
after
the program, and you wanted to have a bit of clarity on which idea to follow. And I think you did get it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so. I mean, ever since I started this program and I finished it, even though we're still going to see each other, we're still catch ups, exactly. Uh-huh. I have definitely been doing more things that I want to do. And I have definitely found out a bit more about myself. And I'm putting myself out there a bit more because I'm more comfortable with myself knowing I have dyslexia and that's who I am.
Sweet.
Because you can't change that.
I know. And sometimes when you say to somebody, oh, I'm dyslexic, you're going to get the old definition popping through that person's head.
Yeah.
Like, oh, gosh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that. And I remember one of my adults, he's quite sort of gung-ho after his program and said, yeah, I'm dyslexic. Because to me, it's like a compliment.
Yeah.
If I see someone and I see them particularly good at something, I think, oh, how exciting, you might be dyslexic. And they'll go, oh.
Yeah.
But he said this to one person. She said, oh, I've got some pills that might help you get rid of your dyslexia. And he said, why would I want to get rid of it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Control it, yes, and give yourself what you need. But you're always going to have this wonderful life.
You can't get rid of it.
No.
No, and I don't think you should, because it's who you are to a large degree.
Ron always says there's as many different types of dyslexia as there are dyslexics. I remember you wanting to have a direction.
Yeah, it was wanting to have a direction. Because at the time, I just felt like I was floating in air. I left school for a bit. I quit my job. Thank goodness I did.
So you quit your job, you came for the program, you were floating in air, and you needed to find out more about yourself.
Yeah.
And found out that you have this wonderful way of thinking.
Yeah.
And the program that we're talking about, obviously you get tools and you sort out existing confusions and you get to grips with the reading thing, and then you start making models for the words that don't have images behind them.
Yeah.
And that's what you're continuing with now.
Yeah.
And that's not easy, actually, when you're an adult. Because you've got so many other things to do with your life.
you've got bills to pay, people to see.
That's exactly the sort of thing.
Yeah.
So Tristan, I am quite sure that people listening to this podcast will have related to many of the challenges that you've been able to share with us. And I hope that helps them to feel that they're not alone out there. Because from the work that I've been doing for the last 20 years, the stories I hear are very common to everybody, right? But at the same time, that person feels that they're often just that one person in the class or that one person at work. And it's really, really important that they get to know that this is a common challenge. You've done something about it. You're beginning to get that direction that you were talking about.
Yeah.
And how does that feel?
Very liberating, for sure.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's very liberating, and it's great because I'm discovering more of who I am and where I'm going every day.
There's a world that's opening up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I feel that what we do sort of puts everybody on the same playing field. It's like everybody can choose how much they learn and how much they want to learn and what they want to learn about, but the how to learn part, I feel, is the bit that's not being dealt with at the moment.
Yeah, it's true. It's how you learn is big.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get that into the school systems and just even everyday life, even certain businesses.
Just making people aware of this.
Well, if you're aware of it, then the negative look on it goes away, right?
And the thing is, unless you know there's a problem, you're not going to sort it.
Exactly.
We have to explain that there is a problem out there, that our school system is, if you like, built for the little PC computer, and we happen to be the little Apple Macs, right?
Yeah.
And there is nothing wrong with our computer whatsoever. But we need to make that information much more available, I think.
Yes.
And that's obviously the reason that we're doing these interviews as well. And yes, you can help people correct the challenges, and yes, you can get this into schools to prevent the challenges.
Yeah.
And to me, that is the most valuable part.
There's
a common thing that happens in school. Teachers tell kids to focus, pay attention, concentrate. Nobody ever tells them how.
Yes.
Right? And so you just have to pull yourself in and do the concentrating thing, and it's stressful and it's exhausting. I've never understood that. It's like me giving you a pair of knitting needles and saying knit.
Yeah.
Right? Well, you're going to have to say show me how.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so we definitely need to show the children how to focus, which is something that's easy to do even with the little ones.
Yeah.
And being relaxed is important, and being able to control your own energy levels is important. And when you have those three things in place, then you're in the right place to learn. But what I see in schools, I see a lot of management rather than a lot of content being delivered. And the thing is, if you're trying to manage the kids, you can't. It's an impossible situation. Nobody can manage anybody. Yeah. Right? The kids have to be shown how to manage themselves. And the people who've been using these tools in local elementary schools are finding that the kids are much more focused and much more relaxed. And I have to tell you, there's one Montessori teacher. She teaches 3 to 5 year olds, and she's got them using these tools, right? Yeah. Their focus and their release and their dial. And she's hearing them in the playground telling each other, "You need to get your dial down."
Yeah.
It's just so sweet. So they've totally got ownership of it. Yeah. At that age, it's a remarkable
thing. It's a skill. Oh. You're teaching them a skill.
And
it is a skill to be focused.
Yeah.
It is. It requires many things. Why else do you think people do yoga?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And other sports like that that requires focus, right?
Yeah.
It's so true, I think.
Yeah. But the control of it is the big deal, isn't it? And a lot of people seem to think that if you have an interesting subject, then people will focus. And there's a truth to that it becomes more interesting and it engages you more. But you can still lose focus. The thing is, our attention span is a big thing too, right? We have 32 images a second going through our heads. If they're not kept absorbed and excited, if you like, then we're going to drift off into our imaginations. And, you know, get accused of daydreaming and not paying attention. And half the time at school, the reason we do that is because we don't have enough pictures to think with. We're being given words we don't have images for. And so we leave the movie theater.
Of course.
And of course we do, you're right. Now you have a little bit more direction and you're aiming for some more studies.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's cool. That's very cool. So, your last message to the world on dyslexia. I don't mean your last. I mean the last.
But on this, yeah. Understand that it's okay, because if you think that it's not, you can't change it. You can't run away from it. Why should you? You should embrace it, because it really is. It is something to be proud of.
Yeah.
Really. Because it will help. It's helped me quite a lot of times. That doesn't mean you won't have your challenges behind it, like we were talking about. But if you have dyslexia, you have to embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my message for it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And it will, the whole gift of dyslexia, this altering of perception, it will bring challenges in some area. You might be brilliant at reading and you might be fine with spelling. My challenge was math. And, you know, other people, they might have difficulty catching things. So this wonderful way of thinking will definitely bring challenges in some area, but it'll also bring huge gifts.
Yeah.
Right? Being able to see things from so many different angles. And when you're a carpenter, you just know whether something's going to fit there. And if you're a designer or an event planner or somebody who cuts hair, I mean, there's so many wonderful opportunities. And I'm sure that people who are good at that already are using this way of thinking without even knowing they're doing it.
Exactly. Without a clue.
The kids who are good at soccer, their coaches say he just seems to know to be in the right spot. Well, you can call it intuition, but my guess is your mind's eye has already given you that information.
Yeah.
And that's where you go.
Yeah, it's true.
Yay.
I like that.
Yay, that's fantastic. So thank you.
Thank you.
For doing this, and thank you for having the original idea.
There'll be many more to come.
There will be, there will be. It'll be lots of fun. So thank you from Tristan and from me. Good night.
Cheers.
I have a feeling many of you could relate to those challenges, right? Not easy to live with, but good to know you can do something about them. So thank you, Tristan. Next time, we'll all find out how we think and learn in a really fun way. Don't forget, you can always reach out to us at www.thewds.org, and we'd love to hear from you. Till then.